Welcome to the Gordon Medical Forum. In today's episode, Doctors Nafisa Parpia and Eric Gordon are going to be talking about the role of peptide therapy in complex chronic illness. Peptides are tiny proteins made up of short chains of amino acids. They signal the cells in your body to perform in specific ways. While they may be extremely small, they're really a big deal because they're responsible for all the ways that your body and mind function. Peptides are such a fascinating and timely topic. We're so excited to share this conversation with you. So let's get started.
So welcome, everyone. This is a topic that has really taken hold in our practice over the last 2 years. I mean, peptides has been something that we have used intermittently over the last probably 15, 20 years. But in the last 2 to 3 years, Dr. Parpia has begun to use it in a different manner. Remember, peptides have been used in the biohacking world and in people who are weight training and stuff like that for a long time. And slowly we started to realize how important they were in immune modulation and in activating the immune system. And with that in mind, we've started to use them with our chronic patients, and it's really made a difference. You know, it's something that doctors in this field are just beginning to do. And Dr. Parpi has been talking about it over the last few years, and we realize that it's time to like put it together for our patients. We've just seen people improve much quicker than we've had in the past. So let's start off a little bit with what is a peptide?
Hey, welcome everyone. So peptides are building blocks of proteins. Proteins are chains of 40 or more amino acids. Some people say 50. There's some debate around there about if a protein is 40 or 50 amino acids. No, a peptide is 20 or less amino acids. And your body naturally produces them by breaking apart larger proteins. So think of them as the building blocks of proteins, and your body naturally makes them.
Peptides are, some of them are hormones. I mean, they're messenger molecules, you know, and they're made by breaking down larger proteins. One of them is called pro-opio-melanocortin. And this is a long protein that's made, people thought initially was made in the pituitary gland, but it's actually made, like many of these, turns out they're made all over the body. And it's broken down into ACTH, which is what tells your adrenals what to do, and into MSH and actually and melatonin. And then it's broken down into MSH, which is a peptide that we use a piece of, and we'll talk about that later. But just want to get the idea that these are chemicals your body is making as it's going through the healing process. Okay. And they're very non-toxic because they're basically exactly what your body makes.
Okay, so I'm going to talk about peptide therapy. So it utilizes chemical messenger sequences in the systems of your body that you already have available. So we can get all kinds of results actually from the peptides. So they regulate tissue-specific function. They promote restoration. They regulate a new and healthier homeostasis. Now, each peptide has its own unique set of functions. They can act as hormones. They can act as neurotransmitters. They can influence our brain chemistry, immune modulation, our physiology. They can even influence our behavior. They play a major role in how our body responds to diet, exercise, infections, or general cellular stress and recovery. So we see them have a significant role in the healing of immune dysregulation, fatigue, cognition, inflammation, sleep disorders, insulin sensitivity, metabolic health issues. They enhance longevity. They can increase endurance and increase lean muscle mass. Each of these issues that I just listed, most of our patients have them all, right? So we're not talking about using peptides just for longevity. Of course, that does happen. But in our practice, it's for bringing about a new homeostasis, a new normal in our patients, starting with their immune system.
Yeah, these are pretty amazing molecules, and they're safe and they're effective. The problem has been in sourcing them because most of them are not FDA approved. People have to understand that to get FDA approval for something to treat a medical condition these days is upwards of $100 million to get through the FDA. And so no one's going to do that for things that are natural and that can't be patented. It's a little bit of the Wild West out there. And the important thing is, either the molecules are very safe. These are originally, when they first started using them, they were derived from animal tissues. But now they're all synthesized, which makes them very safe. The issue is that in the process of synthesizing them, solvents are used, and these have to be totally removed if you're going to take them, especially since many of these are injected. And that's where it's really important to make sure you're getting them from reputable people and from pharmacists who process them and make sure they're pure. There was a recent article in the New York Times. It was called "The Heart of the Bass Doping Network." And you have to understand, the issue about doping is that, I said, these peptides have been used mostly by athletes and people who are looking to optimize their health. And, you know, this article from the Times showed that, it was a report from Switzerland, that about 80% of the ones that the Swiss government evaluated turned out to be adulterated. So it really is important to get the right stuff.
Right. So we don't suggest purchase them on the internet because
we don't know.
We just don't know. So you definitely want to get them from peptide pharmacies or from producers who know exactly what they're doing, doing it the right way. Now, the exciting part for us is that we've been sharing with other experts in how to use this for complex chronic illness. Like you were saying, most people have used them in the past and in the present for performance and longevity and for biohacking tools for athletes, actually. Now, that's great, but what we found is very different now as we use them with our patients with complex chronic illness. And what we want to do is take a minute and tell you about who our typical patients are. And that's going to segue into why we use the peptides and how we use them for this patient population. So most of our patients have many chronic infections. They're low level, they're low grade, they've been going on for a long time, they've been undiagnosed for a long time. They also have problems of environmental toxicity. They have high levels of environmental toxins, or they might have genetic issues with detoxification and in their inflammation pathways as well. So they've got this high body burden of environmental toxins, and they have a high burden of chronic low-level infections. The infections are typically things like tick-borne diseases, or it might have people who are who have post-infectious illnesses like long haul, or they have issues with mold, chronic viral issues like chronic Epstein-Barr virus, parasites. Most of our patients have a combination, actually, of all of these infections. And then the common toxins they have are heavy metals, mercury, lead in the blood, mycotoxins, microplastics. We test for all of these things, actually. So now this combination of infections and toxins causes inflammation and immune dysregulation. Actually, it starts by causing immune dysregulation. That immune dysregulation then causes inflammation in the system. So we're using peptides for inflammation and immune modulation prior to killing our infections and prior to reducing the toxins. Now, once we start with those peptides for immune modulation, it becomes faster and easier to kill infections and detox. You want to think about what happens whenever we kill an infection. Even when we detox, we get a flare of cytokines. That just comes with the territory of detox and with killing the infection. So we want to prepare the patients for that load of inflammatory cytokines that's going to come through as we're killing these low-grade infections, as we're detoxing. And these peptides modulate the immune system. Once we get that going, everything else is easier and it's faster. So patients who could have taken maybe 2 years are now taking 6 to 12 months. That's amazing. We can get our patients back their lives faster. And that's what gets me so excited about the peptides. Though, of course, one more thing. They are coming to the clinic. They're doing other therapies. They're augmenting everything else we do. It's not a standalone treatment. For some people, though, it can be.
I think one of the important things that people have to realize is that, and what kept us from using the peptides more years ago, was many times people were starting with some of the peptides from the thymus gland that can be immune stimulating. And since many of our patients have MCAS, or mast cell activation, and these are folks who in the past, they would start a therapy for treating Lyme or even detox, and they would have big reactions. They'd flare. Their symptoms would get worse. and often made them very gun shy of any therapy because everywhere they turned, life wasn't safe. You know, everybody's good idea made them sicker. Okay. And it turned out that most of these people have mast cell activation, which just means that the mast cells, which are your original immune cell, the T cells and B cells, you know, came later, but the mast cells were the first ones as organisms developed into multicellular beings. And mast cells are everywhere. Okay. And they actually help orchestrate immune response. So if your mast cells are overactive, anything that gets your body to begin to turn on, to release cytokines, those chemicals that your immune system uses to communicate, can trigger mast cells. Now, when they're working well, they know not to overreact. But if you've been sick a long time, they get very, very antsy and they start causing inflammation. And we have found that if we start using two of the peptides in particular, in fact, actually one of them called amlexinox is small like a peptide. It's a small molecule. Technically, it's not exactly a peptide because it's got another chemical in it other than just an amino acid. But it's a very small molecule. And so we consider it a peptide. But amlexinox is a medicine originally developed in Japan for actus ulcers and is now licensed there for treating asthma and allergies. It's not licensed in America for that, but we can get it from compounding pharmacies. It tends to mellow the immune response, those mast cells, in a very gentle way without the side effects of many of the quote-unquote antihistamines, which leave people tired and kind of drug-like. And also another peptide called KPV. And if you remember the beginning, I talked about that really big, long one, the pro-opiomelanocortin, which breaks down into melatonin. And then from that, there's something, well, actually the thing that produces melatonin, something called MSH. And a little piece of that is called KPV, just three amino acids, but it has a lot to do with quieting the immune response and getting it to be more balanced. And also it helps healing.
Okay. And I'm going to talk a little bit about BPC 157. This is peptide therapy's golden child. This is the peptide that if anybody's using peptide therapies or they're just beginning, they usually turn to this one first. It brings down inflammation in the gut. Now, it's been studied for decades, actually. It was first found in human gastric juices, and it helps to heal ulcers. We also know now, through all the studies it's been through, that it protects an inflamed GI epithelium, meaning leaky gut, or inflammation in the gut as well. Now it protects the liver from toxic insults like alcohol or too many pharmaceuticals. It's a free radical scavenger. It has neuroprotective properties. This is one of the ones that I do like to use earlier on in the process. Some people will be sensitive to BPC-157. It can keep people awake longer at night. So I tell people don't take it after 2 p.m., Now, our patients are super sensitive. Dr. Gordon was saying they have mast cell activation syndrome. Their mast cells are on a hair trigger. Anything is going to set their immune system off for our patients generally. So for some people, even BPC-157 can be difficult at first. So that's why we like to start with amlexinox and KPV, make sure that they're going to be able to handle the next thing that's coming. You might notice we're not even killing the infections yet. We had some people ask about LL37. When to use that. Certainly not yet, because we're still working on immune modulation. This can take a month, sometimes 3 months in certain people. Now, the next one I'm going to talk about is TB4-FRAG. This calms down the immune system. It stimulates the production of T cells. It's essential for the protection, repair, and regeneration tissues, or as inflammatory cytokines. It also impacts multiple pathways for neurologic recovery. It reduces inflammation and it increases angiogenesis, which is the creation of new small blood vessels. Neurogenesis, not too many things do that, but there have been trials on rats, not in people yet, but on the rats, it does show that it brings about neurogenesis. So that's very interesting. And then it stimulates the expression of variety of molecular mediators of neuromuscular plasticity. Now, once someone has been on these for a month, 2 or 3 months, typically not more than 3 months, we're talking about our patient population who's really sick, right? And really sensitive. Usually 3 months is the most. We can now come into peptides for infection treatment. So once we've onboarded these peptides for allowing the immune system to put its defenses down, we're stopping the loop of inflammation that the patient is stuck in. And that's really important. It then becomes faster and easier to kill the infections and to detox. And we're more able to deal with the cytokine cascade that comes about with killing of infections.
Now, one of the interesting things about peptides is they're part of the healing cycle. Okay, is because a lot of the chemicals that we release when we first get infected, especially some of these proteins, then get broken down into smaller particles, which are these peptides that are then allowed healing. Now, big part of this process is from a larger molecule called thymulin. And it turns out it's not just in the thymus gland, it's produced in lots of places in the body. But what's happened is we've broken these down into smaller pieces. You have the TB4 frag, which Dr. Parpi was just speaking about. And then we have thymosin alpha 1. Okay. And it's interesting that these all come from one bigger molecule, just pieces of them. Okay. And they actually, even though they start in the same big thing, each piece does very different things. So I just want to emphasize to people, because out there on the internet, you'll see something called TB500, which is TB4, but it's the full TB4 molecule. And I emphasize again, this field, there are many different names that sound similar for sometimes the same thing and sometimes a little bit different. So it can be confusing. So the TB500 or the TB4, they're the same, is something, again, helps healing, okay, and does quiet down the immune system, but it also has a stimulating effect. And that's why we use the TB4 frag, which is a smaller part. That's the part to quiet things down. The other interesting molecule that comes from this thymulin, this big piece, is we call it TA1, thymulin alpha 1. Now, this one really reconstitutes your immune system, especially your T cells. Okay. And so it is great for if you're healthy and you get a cold or a virus infection, this really will help you beat it. In fact, people have looked into this for treating COVID. It's used all over the world, not in America, but in the rest of the world for treating hepatitis, hepatitis B especially, and also has been used in cancer because it activates your T cells. Okay. But we have to wait until we've modulated the immune system, as Dr. Parpi was talking about, before we add it in. And along with this is another small molecule called LL37. Now, LL37 comes from a family called, I can never pronounce it, but capsaicins. These guys are small molecules that help us fight viruses. Okay. And again, at the right time, they're excellent. You give it to a patient who has MCAS or just an overexcited immune system, and you can cause a bit of a herpes or an allergic, not quite an allergic reaction, but a reaction where their immune system makes them not feel well. So again, it's knowing when to add these things in.
I want to talk a little bit about our immune system. So for our patients who have this combination of many infections, many different environmental toxins, structural integrity issues, hormonal issues, neurotransmitter issues, all of this contributes to immune dysregulation. Now, when we're talking about immune dysregulation, we're talking about, on one hand, there's a hyperactive immune system, mast cell activation syndrome that Dr. Gordon was talking about earlier. We're talking about autoimmune conditions. So this is where the immune system is hyperactive. On the other hand, the patients can't mount an appropriate immune response to kill recurrent infections, these low-grade recurrent infections. So how can it be that we have a hyperactive immune system, we have a weak immune system at the same time? Well, it's a confused immune system. We're using the peptides at first to bring that confused immune system into line, bring it into alignment. I mean, so once it's in alignment, the hyperactivity comes more into alignment. We can now start to kill the infections, because when the immune system is so confused, if we try to kill infections first, it just backfires. So we're using peptides to calm down the immune system first. Then we're using the peptides to bump up that other part of the immune system that isn't able to take care of the infections. Then we're ready for peptides for neuroinflammation and mitochondrial repair. So now you might wonder, well, how long does this take? Use LL37 and TA1. By the way, we're also using other infectious agents to treat infections. We're using antiviral herbs or medications. We might be using antimicrobial herbs, sometimes antibiotics. It all depends on what the patient needs. So the answer about how long for that, I don't know. It's different for each person when it comes to killing off the infections. It can take several months, some people a year, some people years. This is really an individual thing. But once we've finished dealing with those chronic infections, we then want to address neuroinflammation and mitochondria. So treating mitochondria and neuroinflammation is more towards the end of treatment. So do you want to talk a little bit about the cell danger response and mitochondria?
Well, briefly, because we've talked about this many times, it's just that the mitochondria, you know, many people think when they're chronically ill and they're fatigued all the time and have brain fog, that their mitochondria are broken. And almost never. It's more often that the mitochondria, when they sense inflammation or toxicity, they kind of turn down their energy production, and the little ATP they make, they now use as a signaling molecule rather than something to supply your body with energy. And when that's going on, you're not going to have as much energy for functioning. You're going to feel tired. So we have to signal to the body when it's stuck in that place that it's safe, because that's the mitochondria is really sensing danger. And once it begins to, this should be a very short-lived process. And when the immune system is working correctly, the signals all go and the mitochondria, you know, start getting the nutrients that they expect and they go back to normal. But many times when we can't get rid of the infection and it stays at a low level, some of the cells of your body are continuing to feel that life isn't safe. And so the mitochondria are stayed at a low energy state. Now, the cool part about peptides is that these are the signals your body use to tell your mitochondria that it is safe. You can come out and play again and start functioning normally. So that's just one of the really exciting aspects of peptide therapy.
We want to use the mitochondrial treatments towards the end because we don't want to rev up the mitochondria when they're in a stuck pattern. It's just going to create more stuckness, some aspects of the cell danger response where inflammation is key and where mitochondria are creating inflammation. So that's why we want to rev them up at the right time, which is once those insults are gone, the primary insults, the infections, the toxins. So we're going to talk a little bit about neurotreatment. So I like to use RG3. It's not a peptide, but it calms down microglial inflammation and it brings down the inflammation that begins to spill out the inflammatory chemicals from the brain just automatically. And then there's CELANC. It elevates BDNF. BDNF is like fertilizer for the brain cells. So it's protective to the brain cells. It also helps with some detox of the cytokines that can be stuck in the brain. So it's cerebroprotective. And it helps with some of those toxins that are latched on to the receptor sites.
And then we have cerebrolysin. Now, cerebrolysin is a really interesting one. Originally, it was derived from pigs' brains. It was purified and used actually as an IV therapy for a long time in Europe and in America. Unfortunately, it is no longer used that way, but it has been synthesized and it is available as orals. And you can still get it from Europe as an injectable. And it's really an amazing peptide. I mean, I've seen it in the old days when we used it injected, just really brain fog and early dementia, sometimes even pretty advanced dementia, have improved in certain people. You know, and it also works really well along with glutathione and BPC. And as we'll see later, it's sometimes in a little stack of a few of them. Another one that we like to use is Dihexa. Now, Dihexa is interesting because it comes as an oral form and also a topical, and it's used a lot in Parkinson's. It definitely also improves cognitive function and mood. And we use it a lot in Parkinson's because sometimes, I mean, it's just good for them. And people who have trouble swallowing, it's nice to have the topical approach. Some people, and we also have found it helpful in helping cognitive function, is combining the CELANC and the CMAX along with a cerebrolysin. CMAX is, I hate CELANC and CMAX because they sound almost alike and it's confusing, but CELANC is more detox and helps anxiety and mood a lot. The CMAX, it does help decrease inflammation in the brain and it really helps cognitive function. But inflammation causes problems with thinking. It doesn't. And so any of they all kind of work together. And the combination of C-Lank, C-Max, and C-Rolysin, there's actually some literature in people showing that it does help in Parkinson's. And it makes sense because Parkinson's is, you know, we know that all illnesses have a huge environmental component, but Parkinson's is one that even what I call the conventional world acknowledges that there are definitely environmental triggers that have a lot to do with Parkinson's onset. So helping detox the brain really is helpful.
Another thing I want to talk about is getting our glucose under control. What we're noticing lately is that a lot of patients are coming in with high fasting blood sugar or high hemoglobin A1C, and these patients have perfectly normal BMI. They're not overweight. They're eating pristine, actually. Their diet's pristine, and yet they still have issues with blood sugar. Or we're seeing people who have pristine diets and they're overweight. It's not fat. It's inflammation. And so what's causing this blood sugar dysregulation is inflammation at the heart of it. That's what's causing hyperinsulinemia. And so we've got some peptides that can help with that. Combination of semaglutide and BPC-157 can really help to modulate the insulin response. Semaglutide works by helping the pancreas to release the right amount of insulin at the right time. It blocks the liver from releasing a sugar too quickly, and it slows down how fast food leaves your stomach. So this can help with weight loss as well, as a lot of you probably already know, but also with blood sugar. And then MOTS-C. So this is a potent metabolic regulator. It can enhance autophagy, mitochondrial function, and improve insulin sensitivity as well. It's been referred to as exercise in a bottle because it can mimic some of the effects of exercise by activating the fat burning pathways, and it upregulates the mitochondrial genome.
Just a note about semaglutide is that still not sure it's a great idea to be using it long-term. It's become a big thing. Everybody wants to be on Wegovy or Ozempic, and that is semaglutide. But for short-term use, I think it really is excellent. It's just that if we don't fix the underlying inflammation, the weight gain comes right back. Okay, that's the part that people in the conventional diabetes and blood sugar world, I don't think they've quite gotten, is that it's inflammation, which is probably driving the hyperinsulinemia, that is driving the weight gain right. And the fat storage.
And I think using with BPC-157 and KPV would really help address that.
Exactly.
Instead of just using it on its own.
Right. And again, the detox and dealing with the underlying infections. I mean, you know, remember is that if you just use a substance, you're just using a Band-Aid. Okay. And that's the problem with conventional medicine is just the Band-Aids. These are all meant to be used as part of a process of healing, of getting the body back to health and back to functioning normally. They're not an end. These are not designed to be used forever. You know, you're not supposed to be living on these. This is not another blood pressure medicine or blood sugar medicine where here, take this and come back and for the rest of your life. No, these are used as part of a process to help your body get back to normal. So peptides for sleep. This is always a big one because sleep is a huge, huge issue. And this is one area where I think it really is a little more hit or miss. In the other peptides, we find, you know, like, I don't know, it's always hard to say 80, 90, never 100%, but very, very good. With these, with the peptides for sleep, it really depends on what's moving in your body. Now, interestingly, one of the ones that we're trying for sleep is something called CJC or CJC-1296. Now, this is a growth hormone releasing peptide. And growth hormone is something that at tiny, tiny doses we use, you know, 20 years ago for people with chronic fatigue, but tiny doses, not the doses that athletes use to get big and strong or Hollywood people would use to stay young, but tiny doses are very, very effective. The reason we've gone to these peptides is because the FDA looked askance, appropriately maybe, at the use of growth hormone for quote unquote off-label uses. So it's only approved for like low growth hormone states that have been proven. CJC is a growth hormone releasing. And so it just gets your body to release the peptide, but it hangs around. The nice part about it, bound very tightly to albumin, so it stays around a while, but it still allows a pulsatile release of growth hormone, which is kind of nice because growth hormone is meant to release in pulses, not to stay consistently high. But what we found is that it really helps sleep. Initially, sleep is the first thing it improves, but it also will improve muscle mass. And after a few weeks, it seems to have some really nice effects on cognitive function as well. So we like it a lot. And it does, again, decrease the stress and inflammation in the body. So blood sugars often improve. And
we have delta sleep inducing peptide. This is a neuromodulator and sleep regulator. So it increases GABA and glutamine in the brain, which allows for relaxation and then sleep. It helps with pain modulation. It is typically found in the brain. And so when it's given, it does pass the blood-brain barrier to help with these things. It's given for the treatment of pain, alcohol, or opiate withdrawal as well. Eric, do you want to talk about apitegromab? Kind of have to hurry, we got to leave time for question and answer.
Okay. So apitegromab is sort of like the grandfather of the peptides. It was developed by Dr. Kavinson. Dr. Kavinson is a Russian scientist who's been exploring peptides initially from animal tissues, but now made in the test tube for the last 40 years. And he's written a lot about it. And he's a very good resource if you want to read about peptides. Now, interestingly, the peptides he uses are different from some that we've been talking about, but they are also very interesting and another subject. But pitholan is one that I think is worth really going over because this one, there's probably, I think, the best data on this one for its effect on longevity and not just longevity, but health. And again, once the inflammation is down a bit, I think we can start with this one. And it's used just a few times, anywhere from twice a year to three times a year, depending on how you dose it. And it increases the sensitivity of the hypothalamus, which kind of is source of a lot of your basic hormones. And it gets the levels to the sex hormones and melatonin, back to a little more normal. It seems to make people a little less reactive to emotional stress. It's a very powerful antioxidant, but the most important thing is that there's clear, at least animal data and some human data, that it increases longevity significantly, at least on animal models. And just the fact that it's only used a few times a year, I think is a real plus for it. But more importantly, it helps sleep and helps the depth of sleep and really getting into stage four sleep. So I think it's a really exciting one.
And really briefly, we wanted to address sexual health for our patients, because our patients have been chronically ill for quite some time now, and they don't have that intimacy with their partner anymore because it's just for so many reasons. So it's nice to be able to help people enjoy that part of their life again. So peptides PT141 and kisspeptin are very, very helpful. Same with oxytocin. So kisspeptin will help build testosterone levels in younger men. So we don't like to give testosterone to men who are younger than 60. Because then it inhibits them from being able to produce their own. So kisspeptin comes in here. You can give them a little bit. It'll stimulate their Leydig cells to produce their own testosterone. You give it to women, a little bit of kisspeptin, and PT141 is going to stimulate libido in women and also in men. We'll talk about PT141.
Well, yeah, the PT141 is a very interesting molecule. Again, we talked about that big molecule being the pro-opioid melanocortin. Well, then you have the MSH, melanocyte stimulating hormone, which is a part of that. Well, we tried using a piece of it called melanotin, and they discovered melanotin 2, it's called, and they were using that because it caused people to tan, and it was good for people who had very sun-sensitive skin. But they started using this and discovered that men started getting erections, notably. And they took a piece of that, a smaller piece of that protein, and they came up with PT141. Now, this seems to work on the dopamine centers in the brain. And so it has effects on, helps men with erections, mostly independent of blood circulation. Viagra and Cialis and medicines like that work just on vasodilatation. And this seems to work more on central function in the brain. What's interesting is that PT-141 is actually approved as a medication in America, and it's called bremelanotide, or Vyleesi is the brand name. This is for women in order for anorgasmic women, for women who have trouble reaching orgasm. It works, but not great. But if you mix it with oxytocin and gazpeptin, you'll get a much better effect. And it really augments the ability for women to actually enjoy sexual intimacy.
And sometimes we use bioidentical hormone therapy too.
We remind people is that we're the talking heads here, but you know, we've got some other really great physicians who've been also using peptides with us. You know, Dr. Kunkel, Dr. Jamie is an amazing doc and very creative as well. And we've got some others that we're trying not to keep too busy yet because they're working with me, but you'll get to know them in time.
And that's a wrap for today's episode. We hope you enjoyed the conversation as much as we did. We love hearing from our listeners, and one of the best ways to show your support is by leaving us a review on your favorite podcast platform.